Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, ESPN Investigates. Season 2 of the ESPN Investigates podcast is now available. The Running Man tells the story of an obscure former Olympian and alleged serial sexual predator and how a 14-month ESPN investigation brought him out of the shadows. More than 50 men were physically abused and mentally manipulated by their coach for over 40 years until they banded together decades later to find justice. Be sure to check it out. You can download and subscribe to ESPN Investigates as well as The Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is that time of week where we have a guest join us. Check my man out at ESPN and various places. Howard Bryant, what's going on, man?
What's up, man? I am inclined that there are a lot of haters out there these days. That's my inclination.
Where's your top line right now? Like, currently existing haters?
Well, I was going to say top shelf. I'm still stuck on baseball. But absolutely, as we were talking before, I got to say, does anything top where we are 4 days before an election? That's kind of got to take everybody, right? That's no pun intended, the Trump card.
No, but I do think, though, right, with baseball, am I a hater for saying that Justin Turner needed to stay his ass in the pack? The whole story on that blows my mind. So they find out in the 8th inning that they got to take him out the game, which is its own kind of whiskey tango foxtrot situation. And so they get him out, and then the Dodgers win the World Series, and he just can't be kept from celebrating with his teammates. And his teammates, who I understand where they're coming from, are like, nah, we're going to let him be out here. He's been important to our team and everything else. But they went and told this dude, you can't come out here. And he said, I'm going out there.
Who's
going
to stop me?
Yo, you're trespassing right now. Like, that's the whole thing I looked at in that is, you trespassing right now. You mean to tell me there's nobody that can get out here and stop this man from trespassing? Like, I find it kind of funny. How could they get him out the game, but they couldn't stop him from getting on the field?
Hey, man, you got to go to quarantine for the last 6 outs, man. Okay. But if we win, man, you know where I'm going to be. And then how about a nice big smooch for my wife on national television?
Yo!
With a COVID positive.
Yo, all of it was just like, what are you doing? And by the way, I still need an answer for where he got it. Like, they're in the bubble. Get it? How did you wind up getting it? Like, I'm not judging him for it necessarily. I mean, I might judge depending on what the answer ultimately turns out to be. Because I'd be feeling bad for people who get COVID, who are doing the things that they, you know, are supposed to do, they're being diligent, and then they still wind up getting it because they wind up being ashamed to tell people that they've gotten it because they don't want to be judged. Because we look on the internet and we look on the Instagram and we see all these people who have earned our judgment. That's for how they out here kicking it, right?
Mm-hmm. I just want to know. Well earned.
Yeah, I just want to know how in the bubble that this dude wound up catching it.
Well, and I started thinking about it from, you know, also from that standpoint, too. I mean, and let's not forget, all the crowd shots throughout the 6 games had all kinds of fans out there with no masks on in the stands. It doesn't take a lot of fans to create a spreading event. So he could have gotten it on the field. Who knows? And who knows how tight the MLB bubble was, because they didn't bubble for all season anyway. So it's not like they were locked down like the NBA or the NHL was.
Yeah.
By the time it was over, Bo, I'm wondering how you feel about this, especially with what's happening in the Big Ten and what's happening in Florida as well, is that as I'm starting to work on this last, you know, the last piece of MLB, like I'm going to do this sort of year ender, was this a success or was this an abomination? And you look at how hard people work to get this thing on the field. And then there was a conversation as to whether, well, you know what, are these guys legitimate champions? I haven't heard that question lately anymore about whether or not this was a legitimate championship. I think people are like, okay, at the end of the day, there was going to be a winner. I try to look at it from the standpoint that I don't compare where we are now to the Nationals and the Astros or any other championship previously. I try to compare this to where we were in March, where we were like, we're not going to see any sports for a year. And the fact that we've actually seen something and we actually have seen champions crowned in 3 sports, 4 sports, you know, WNBA, NBA, NHL and now Major League Baseball. I tend to think that there is some value in that. But then when you top off your championship with a guy in a team photo who has a positive test, and then you look at what's happening in the Big Ten right now, where they said we're not playing, and now you look at what's happening with Wisconsin and the rest of them, you kind of wonder if all of this is a reminder that we shouldn't be out here in the first place.
Yeah, not unless you can take every precaution possible, right? Like the NBA bubble and the WNBA bubbles.
And the NHL.
Yeah, there's no way around it. They got it done. And my thing on all of this stuff with COVID has been, if you can find a way to do it safely, then you absolutely should do it. If you cannot find a way to do it safely, then you absolutely should not do it. Like, it's pretty simple. Basketball found a way to do it safely. Good for them. Hockey found a way to do it safely. Good for them. Major League Baseball, we started off with some hiccups, but they wound up almost with best case scenario with their setup, where a couple guys got caught out here being reckless and the players brought the hammer to them. And that's so right. Once that happened, it became self-enforcing and they got, you know, to this point at the end. But they almost got to what I think would be, for fans, a doomsday scenario, which is they almost had to postpone game 7, because if the Rays win that game and this thing has happened with Turner, we don't know where this goes from there. Like, they got to shut this down. We don't know how exactly it winds up playing out. But Dan, my man Dan Lepetar made a great point. If they had gotten all the way to game 7 and they weren't able to play to game 7, but they had fulfilled all these television obligations, do you think Rob Manfred would have qualified this as being a success? Because I think he would have.
I think he would have as well. I think he would have as well. And especially because if we notice about Major League Baseball, they have never really been forthcoming about the books unless they're losing money, unless they say they're losing money. So now they're talking about, hey, we lost $3.8, we lost $4 billion during this. Think about what it would have been had they not gotten on the field at all. So absolutely, I think they're going to view this as a success. Obviously, if you're the Dodgers, you're viewing this as a success, even though you essentially played 80 games. I think it was 78 games, right? So it's not even half a season. But at the same time, everybody was going through the same conditions. Everybody was going through the same adversities and the rest of it. And at the end of the day, you played a 6-game series that was more than mildly entertaining. Right. I mean, yeah. I enjoyed watching this, and I think that I felt the same way, whether we're talking about Rafa Nadal with the French Open and Naomi Osaka with the U.S. Open, or the NHL playoffs sort of went by in a blink, the Stars and the Bolts. But at the same time, I think all of those championships, gave us something that we didn't expect we were going to get the first week of April.
Yeah. Like, I think, though, you talked about whether this is a legitimate champion and all that stuff. I think we're not saying that because the Dodgers are a team that we thought would like legitimately win it or could legitimately win it. I bet we would have heard a whole lot about the illegitimacy of that championship if the Astros had won it. Just people, man, people got so mad at me because I got on TV and said I would have loved it if the Astros would have won, just because so many of the people who hate them so much are people that I also don't like.
Exactly.
Now all of a sudden everybody's moral, right? Now everybody cares about cheating now. And they cheated. They got caught. You may not feel like they got enough of a punishment. Okay, I get you on that. But everybody all of a sudden turns into on the side of right when the Astros come up. If the Astros had won that and it's Dusty Baker, all of a sudden that thing couldn't have possibly counted.
Man, we can't just have one asterisk. We got to have two asterisks. You know, one for one thing and then the other, and then maybe a third asterisk to validate the other two asterisks, right? I mean, that's what it kind of would have been. But at the same time, absolutely right. And I always look at this. When you start looking at the continuum of the 2020 season of the year, calendar year, where you began and where you've ended has been, for baseball, has been fairly remarkable. Because let's also not forget that there was a time when I believe it was the St. Louis Cardinals had played 6 games when everybody else had played like 25.
Yes.
Right? And then the Marlins had played like 4 games and everybody else had played like 15. Just wild.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
we talked about the Big Ten briefly on that, and I just wonder, like, how this has got to be going over in the president offices of the Big Ten. They all voted not to play, right? Then they got bullied by the people, right? And then they decided, okay, well, let's go ahead and find a way. And I think that, and this is my read on it, that the only way they were going to find something that worked for these presidents, who, again, originally were like, no, we're not going to do this, was they had to put this thing in. All right, if somebody tests positive, you can't play for 3 weeks. But, you know, like, that seems to be the thing that they needed, because they're a little bit more hoity-toity over there in the Big Ten than the rest of the major conferences are. And so they decided, no, no, no. Now Wisconsin has this game where it looks like, oh, man, they finally have a quarterback. And now that quarterback can't play for 3 weeks. And now that whole team can't play this week. And Nebraska, which begged everybody for the privilege of getting their asses kicked every single week, now won't even get the joy of getting their asses kicked by Wisconsin this week, which is what they really fought and got out in the streets to ask for.
Right.
Was to go out here and get their asses kicked. And now they don't even get that joy. And now, because the Big Ten pushed it back, they have no off weeks in their schedule. Yeah, so exactly. These games are just canceled. It's just not happening.
Not going to happen. I have the right as an American to voluntarily get my ass kicked, if that is what I so choose.
Yes.
Right. I you know, and it's interesting, too, that if you're the Big Ten, that you allowed yourself to get muscled because you wanted to get muscled. You were hoping there was going to be some other power, namely the President of the United States, to give you cover to go be mad reckless, right?
Yep.
Because you didn't have enough courage on your own to be reckless, so you needed somebody else to provide that cover for you, and who better than the highest office in the country?
Yep, and they had a black dude to blame.
Mr. Warren out there, and we said we could just pin this on him anyway.
Yeah, and I've never said that. I don't think I publicly said that explicitly, but it was hard to ignore that everybody was mad at the commissioner of the Big Ten. And one thing to remember, they had one of these overlords for 30 years, right? Like, they had Jim Delaney running this thing for so long. So on one hand, you are going to look at the commissioner of the conference because something has changed. Like, something is different, and he's the thing that is different. And I do think they did a poor job of explaining why they were doing it, except I felt like the only explanation they needed was, look around you, man. It's a pandemic. Like, it's still so wild to me that they think you need to explain why you're not playing more than anybody needed to explain why it is that they 100%. Were playing, right? So Warren gets out there, and then all of a sudden, he didn't just start being black. Like, he looked around, and he saw what that press was and was like, okay, I guess we need to figure out how we're going to get out here and play some football.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and now they're out there, and Trump got himself involved in it, right? Like, most reports that I'm reading seem to indicate that he didn't really make it happen. He just wanted to be involved in it, in large part because swing states. The Big Ten is full of swing states.
That's right.
I don't think he's going to win any of the legitimate swing states. Right. Like, what are we talking about? Like, you go look at the polling, what everybody's
talking
about.
Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan are the big ones, right?
Right. Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan. But also, Iowa is a little bit swingy. There's that one district in Nebraska, because Nebraska is one of those states that can split their vote.
The caucuses ones, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's going to wind up getting this one. Like, it's wild that the president got involved to try to get some points off of having this Big Ten football. And I don't think he's going to get any of the votes that he thought he would get off of getting those points, especially after them people got left off in the cold after going to that rally. You know, so we wind up with that. He's not getting any points. Nobody in the actual Big Ten, like Kevin Warren, didn't get any points for this.
Nothing. No, he's losing points.
Right. No president got any points for this. Like, once they said, okay, we found a way to do the testing, so now we're going to do it. And everybody's like, well, why didn't you do this before? Because we didn't have that before, but okay.
And the election is going to take place before you have any resolution. So even Ohio State can't be like, see, you know, we benefited from this.
Right.
Who knows how this is going to play out, because the election's in a couple of days. I think that, and it's true, and that's why it's such a silly stunt, right? And I think that if you're Kevin Warren, you got to be thinking, this is a lose-lose-lose for me, right? How can I come out of this well? Where do I win? Where's the victory for me? Can one of my teams win a national championship? Are we even going to finish a season, as we say in politics? Where's his pathway to victory?
It wasn't there.
It was never there, right? The only thing that it struck me when watching what was happening with him was, and I'm glad you brought up the racial part of this, because everyone's going to get so angry about the racial part of it, but allow me to say, as a black man in that position, you are immediately thinking about survival, not just survival for this job, but for every job going forward. I mean, this could have been a career killer for him, right? Where does he go if he says, okay, we're going to stop. We're not going to play. We're going to stick it to the president and tell him, look, we made a decision and a decision's a decision and we believe in the science. And then the other conferences play and nothing happens. Every single day he's getting pounded on this, right? Every day. Now he's kind of vindicated in a lot of ways, but that vindication doesn't come with, hey, Kev, you were right. And now we believe in you. There's no victory for him.
Mm-mm. And that vindication doesn't come because we don't want to give the vindication. Like,
that's right.
You could argue that it isn't not working.
That's right.
But it is not easy to argue that this is actually working, right? Like, it's working in the sense that they are able to put these football games on television. And so they are then able to cash the checks off of these games. Like, if success is simply like adhering to what the contracts were, then okay. There's been some measure of success. We That's can make right. that argument, but we've seen so many games wind up getting canceled, or what I think is actually like worst case scenario, the situation Vanderbilt wound up in when they went and lost 41-7 to South Carolina, where they only had something like 53 scholarship players. They didn't have any chance to actually go out here and get this done. And so we're going to see what this ultimately turns out to be. Wisconsin, at Florida, you see they wound up with six more positive tests. And this comes a couple weeks after they coach like a fool was like, yeah, I wish we could have all our fans in the stadium.
Schools got, they've got what, like 37 now at Florida?
Yep. And they just keep stacking up and they keep stacking up. And these cases are going up all over the place. Like, something that I think has happened is that when this virus was new and it was all like the dominant story in the news before the election really came to, you know, came to the forefront like that, every discussion that we were having was like, yo, new record in cases. Yo, new record in cases. Yo, new record in cases. That's what we're doing again.
Any scientist said this is what was going to happen the minute the temperature dropped and the minute it became an indoor society again, right? Once summer was over, here we go. And now you look at the cases across the Midwest and especially across the West. And I was at the supermarket the other day, Bo, and I will tell you exactly 2 weeks ago, you could buy as much Charmin and Northern and Bounty as you wanted. And today it looks like Eastern Europe in the 1980s, right? You can't, there's sudden, everyone has gone hoarding again. It's back. We're back to where we were in April. The only thing we're not back on is the government's actually shutting everything down. So there is this sort of hybrid thing taking place where on the one hand, there's this desire to say, okay, we've got to get rolling. And on the other, you're looking at what's actually happening and you're like, how's this going to happen?
The shutdown might happen, but are they going to shut this thing down right before everybody try to make these books for Christmas? Like, I feel like Christmas for a lot of these businesses is the last chance, is the last hope.
It's their last hope anyway, even in a regular year. Why do you think they started doing Christmas advertising in August?
Right?
That's the only thing they've got now. So that's the consideration. And it's not a small consideration. Everybody knows at some point people have to work. People have to eat. People have to get paid. People have to pay people. So we understand at some point that there's got to be some compromise. And on top of that, the number of parents who are looking at their own children going, I'm going to need you to go to class right now and get out of the house, right? All of the bonds are breaking across different spectrum right now. Understood. But the bottom line is still what it is. And that is that they call it a pandemic for a reason, right? It's not something easily negotiable. And I think that what's been, when we talk about football, especially, and you would think that football, more than any other sport, college and pro, they had the longest lead time before they actually had opening day. So you would have thought that they would have had the best contingencies. They could have watched what everybody else was doing. They got to see what worked and they got to see what didn't work. And yet they're the ones who look the most chaotic.
Yeah. Have you seen this Emmanuel Sanders? Apparently he went on a podcast talking about when he caught, you know, he got a positive test and how he's been feeling since.
I didn't hear the whole pod.
Listen to this. This is a quote. I just felt like I was like loopy. Like, I was sitting in meetings and my mouth just kept watering and I was like, what the hell? Why is my mouth watering? And it was like that feeling that you're going to throw up, but I didn't feel like I was going to throw up, but my mouth was watering like something was coming. It was like weird. And so I told my coach, I was like, dude, my mouth keeps watering like I'm getting ready to throw up or something. I'm like, yo, it feels weird. And then it was like, I just felt loopy. I just didn't feel like myself. I was like, I feel like I'm getting ready to catch the flu or something. It was weird. So I told my coach that, and he was pretty much the one who was like, you should go tell the trainers. And so then I went and told the trainers, but I just didn't feel like myself. Even when I was running, how I was running, like my body, it just didn't feel right. I was running, but I was exhausting so much energy into running that it felt like abnormal. I didn't feel like myself. And what we all we're doing when dudes test positive, we're like, all right, positive test. All right, negative test. They're back. We're not talking about anything that's happening in the in-between. Like the people who have played this as though either you live or you die.
I was going to say.
They won.
That's right. And the point to that is the concept of life, health, and death, right? Well, you, man, you're 20 years old. You got a 99.6% chance of living. That's not my bar. My bar is not whether this is going to kill me. My bar is what's my life going to be?
Right.
And that part has been completely and totally dismissed. And it's been dismissed out of an abject selfishness that is very American and very sports fan. I'm going to need you to play. And I think that there hasn't even been nearly enough follow-up. And in virtually every follow-up we've had so far with so many athletes, they've talked about lingering effects. They weren't like, oh, okay, I had COVID and now I didn't. Now I'm great. They were like, I had COVID and it's messed me up in a lot of different ways. And so the response to me, I only conclude is that you just don't care, that we've decided, we've created a set of parameters that they're false equivalencies, they're false narratives, that, well, it didn't kill you, so it's all good. And that is just, it's not even bizarre to me. It's incredibly cynical, right? It's not bizarre because we see what's behind it. What's behind it is that you've got a politicized country that's essentially said, look, half the country wants you to shut it down and the other half wants to play. So the people who want to play are going to use death as the barometer. And if you're still standing, this is an overstatement, right?
Yep. As this is gone, the early thing I asked, and it's almost become a forgotten question, I think, is what if Patrick Mahomes gets this and ain't never the same?
Or better yet, who is going to be the guy that we look at and say they were never the same?
Right. I mean, so Ezekiel Elliott and Cam Newton are two people that I have mentioned. Because something doesn't just quite look right with either one of them. Zeke can't hold on to the ball. Cam can't seem to figure out where he wants to throw the ball. Now, it's tricky with Cam, of course, because he's got so many other situations with his body that it's hard to tell where one thing starts and another one ends. Like, I don't have a great answer for this. But as this keeps on going, and as this keeps going on longer and longer, and as people still got to keep sending their kids out and their wives, who knows, like, what their families are doing in this intervening time period, we don't know, like, the long-term effects that this could have on the NFL is the longer-term effects on the players. But people with football in particular, like, you know, people are like, oh, baseball is not America's pastime anymore. Actually, it's still America's pastime because football ain't no pastime to people. Football is a religion.
Yep.
Like, they just really felt like they could not live in a world that did not have football. And look, man, if the football went away, I don't know if we got jobs or how long we got jobs, right? Mm-hmm. Like, people who think that anybody in our business was rooting against football completely misunderstands what pays the bills here.
They've actually never seen the inner office emails we get. They've never seen what we've seen. It's like, you may look at it and go, damn, why is this so important? Well, because it's so important. That's the reason, right? Yeah. Is it completely and totally tilted? Yes. But as I tell people all the time, you have no idea how much football dominates over its other sports.
Yeah.
Financially, it's a monster. And I think that the other part of that, when you're looking at the end game here, it's, I don't even think about football necessarily. I think about the Red Sox. I think about Eduardo Rodriguez. He shut it down. He had myocarditis. And we don't know when he's going to pitch again. This guy's career might be over. Right? I mean, so there are players right now that got taken off the field. We haven't seen them back on the field. Obviously, Patrick Mahomes is a tiny bit bigger name than Eduardo Rodriguez. But the bottom line is that there are people that you are kind of circling right now and to see what they become and how they respond.
You saw the dude from the Jaguars who said he had to go to the hospital twice and they shut him down for the year.
That's
like
right.
At this point, they're not even like, let's just see how this goes. They're like, nah, man, take it to the crib.
Yeah, you're done. You're done. And that is the sacrifice, right? So in other words, what we're really saying is that we have been willing to sacrifice these people who play these games for not just for our entertainment, but because the dollars are so great. It's either do this or the whole thing collapses. right? Where I live here in Massachusetts, at UMass, out in Western Mass, and they got criticized left and right for bringing the students back. But the number of schools that I have spoken to who have said that with remote learning and no sports and enrollments being down and all of that, we got about 2.5-3 semesters before we're hitting like DEFCON 5 here financially. And I'm like, you mean universities going out of business? Yes. D1 universities going out of business. And it's kind of hard to like say, really? But then again, yeah.
And have you, I don't know if you peeped this one with college football, because like the thing with college football is everybody can hide behind all the healthcare stuff, you know, like privacy, HIPAA, all of those things. Wisconsin, they're playing their game. They just said dudes were unavailable.
Yep. What was the hockey euphemism? Unfit to play?
Oh, that's what they went with.
Unfit to play. Okay, can I be fit tomorrow? Right? I mean, when can I play? And so this is the thing. This is why, like, when you start to assess what we've seen, and that's kind of what we do, right? We assess what we're watching as journalists. That question stays with me. Success or abomination? Is this, and I'm thinking about it mostly toward baseball, but obviously the NFL is going to be in the same boat. And the NFL is going to be in a different category because, unlike the other sports, you talk about football as religion. Football has decided, hey, man, we're going to let the fans in too. I mean, look at what's happening in France with the French Open. So it's not attributable only to the French Open, but is there a causality in the fact that the French Open was like, yep, we're going to have fans here too. And now the whole country shut down. And Germany shut down. We're literally back where we were the third week of March.
Yep. And France is shutting down. Germany is shutting down. Like, these places that are not nearly in the state of catastrophe that we are, they're like, nah, nah, nah. Let's go ahead and lock this down. Let's get this under control, and then we'll keep it going.
Well, because it's not even snowing yet, right? So they're trying to look at, okay, what if we do nothing now, what's it looking like in January? Right? I mean, that's sort of the calculation. And I think it is sort of this very interesting thing that we do. You live with something long enough, you get used to it. I don't know about you in New York, but even here in Massachusetts, which likes to consider itself smart and responsible, a lot of people were getting real lax on this COVID stuff over the summer. I was talking to one of my boys yesterday, right? I saw him on the tennis court. I stepped in just to go hang out for a little bit. And I was like, hey, man, I'm looking at your Instagram, and you've been doing a lot of traveling this summer. You've been in a lot of places. You do know there's still a pandemic happening. He was like, yeah, man. But I was like, yeah, my wife and I, man, we had to go out. And we've been in the house since March. I'm like, okay. So you went to Atlantic City, you went to a casino. All right, bet.
A casino.
All right. But once again, on the other hand, I get it. But at the same time, it doesn't show a great deal of fortitude on our parts.
Well, have you, the Nevada numbers are interesting. Basically, Las Vegas might keep us in this forever. Because, like, I always say this about Las Vegas. The TSA line at Las Vegas is America.
It's America, no doubt.
Every single piece of America is represented. Like, Las Vegas is the one thing everybody does. Like, they do it on different levels, they do it in different ways, but Las Vegas is the thing that everybody does. And it's been, like, as this thing is gone, I was looking at one of these things, somebody put together a video of, like, all the graphs, and so you can watch how the charts move and how the numbers, you know, go up and down. And you see these fluctuations from time to time, from state to state and everything else. Nevada seems to stay right at the same place near the top of the list, right there. Because look, they are entirely built on people showing up.
That's
right. The whole business model of the place is for people to show up and do things that don't make a great deal of sense.
That's right. Well, it makes sense as to why people like to call me un-American all the time, because I hate Las Vegas.
Really?
It's just not my game. Well, one, I don't gamble, right? That's the first thing. I don't gamble. Two, I have a problem, and I can't believe I'm going to say this publicly, but now the die is cast. There's no way out, right? I do not like Las Vegas. I do not love Miami. I do not love New Orleans. And what do all three places have in common? One, too many people. My sister calls me a misanthrope, right? That's the first thing. But the second thing, which I think has value to this conversation, Bomani Jones, is the fact that each one of these places encourages you to act like an right? That these places, these are places that you go to do stuff that you don't do in your own house, in your own communities. And I have, like, and I love New Orleans. New Orleans is a great town and the whole thing, but you walk in there and people get there and they just go into crazy mode, right?
Yeah.
And they go to Vegas and they go into crazy mode. Like, hey man, I seen this in The Hangover, right? And they just decide to do things that just run counter to how I tend to act publicly.
Yeah, that's see, all. So with me in Vegas, I had to get a little money in my pocket to enjoy gambling, but I am down to gamble because I can afford to lose, right? Like when I could not afford to lose and I had to stay at the Excalibur, I didn't really see what the big deal was about Las Vegas, man. I hit for about a G at the blackjack table at Bellagio last time. I was like, okay, this Vegas
thing.
This
kind of fun, right?
Yeah,
I can get away with this.
Yeah, yeah, it ain't so bad. They changed some of the laws to make some things a little bit more amenable to lifestyle. Like, okay, cool, y'all did that. We appreciate that. Like, I can dig Vegas on that level. I'm a daytime Vegas type. Go to some, you know, go to good restaurants. Maybe go check out a show.
Yeah.
But I can do Vegas that gets me back in my room at 11:30 and be just fine.
That's some different Vegas. And I will tell you, on the other hand, I have never been to Las Vegas. I have never been to New Orleans when I wasn't working. So I've never been to either one of those places, like, just on vacation.
Yeah.
So the last time I was in Vegas, oh, goodness, I was doing a story. And I went also, I went 08, the winter meetings. And all I wanted to do was to ride the roller coaster on top of New York, and nobody would go with me, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was a Pacquiao fight that same, it was December of 08. I don't remember who he was fighting, but I was walking through the MGM Grand, and all these brothers were going, they were all going to the fight. And I was like, okay. And then within like an hour, there was some like scrap in one of, right, you know, walking through the casino. I'm like, you know what? This just is not for me. But I do appreciate there is no place to people watch like that.
Yeah.
If you're into the people watch, just go take a walk from the MGM across to the Bellagio. You will see as much America as you need to see.
So my line about New Orleans is there's two ways that you can look at it, which is it would be awful if it wasn't so awesome. It would be awesome if it wasn't so awful. There's no in between.
No. And for me, what gets me about it, my feeling about New Orleans is actually out of respect for the people of New Orleans, because if I lived there, I'd be like, why do y'all come down here to puke on my streets?
Man, them people in New Orleans is like, please come down here, puke on these streets and spend money.
You are the economy.
Oh, after the storm, ain't nobody city being nicer to you than they are in New Orleans. And thank goodness they treating you like you from out of town, because if they treat you like you local, there's a chance you might get smoked. Like that, I made a wrong turn means something completely different in New Orleans than it means anywhere else. There is one turn away from them giant mansions, and ain't no telling where exactly it is you might wind up.
There it is. Woo. There it is. It is true. It is true. And you know what's been funny about this, too, is that I've been, once again, trying to ruminate about how we assess where we've been. And when you're taking each individual sport and then try to look at it as a whole, you know, by the end of the year, what have we created, right? And so the NBA has been real interesting to me simply because of, once again, when you think about where we've been, I've been getting more and more and more emails from people asking me, how do you feel about the fact that the NBA is not going to have any social messaging, the Black Lives Matter is not going to be on the court next year? And I'm like, I really didn't give it a whole lot of thought. But I've been surprised by the number of people who are viewing this as some sort of demarcating line or message pitch, right? That it's a sign of retreat on the one hand, and it's a sign of a threat on the other on the part of the league. And I was like thinking about this, and all of these things, as we've seen, have been tied to ratings, right? That there's, for some reason, there is a desire that people have to punish, right? We all kind of know what's underneath it. But somebody, there seems to be in this conversation this need to determine that there had to be some massive fatal price to pay for what happened this summer. Instead of just saying, like, when I talk to a lot of the baseball people, there are a lot of folks who are like, hey, this year is a year where anything goes, right? We all had to adjust. We all did a whole bunch of stuff we wouldn't normally do, and no harm, no foul. The NBA is not getting that dispensation. They are not getting that dispensation at all. Anything that happens to the NBA going forward, it's going to be attributable to, well, see, this is what happens because all those black players protest. And the blatant nature of it is predictable to me in a lot of ways.
Well, to me, here's where these people are telling on themselves to me. They think that the NBA should go all on board slamming China.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Slamming China. In spite of whatever the monetary costs are, whatever it is, it's like, yo, stand up for the right thing. Rebuke China, okay? Put Black Lives Matter on the floor, and then these same people want to come holler at you about the ratings and try to claim that Black Lives Matter on the floor is affecting the number, and therefore you should take it out. Like, what's right all of a sudden doesn't matter when it comes to that one. Mm-hmm. But when they talk about China, now, never mind the fact, by the way, that the NBA actually stood by Daryl Morey in a way that I find, as it has continued, to be surprising, right?
That's
like,
right.
Them standing with him at the time, I don't, and granted, they didn't just like full-throated, you know, get out there, but they said, we respect his right to free speech, he didn't lose his job, you know, all of that sort of stuff. But I saw it run on the bottom line on ESPN yesterday. They said that Morey tweet cost them $200 million. And I have had people tell me that they've heard numbers far larger than that one on what it cost. And Daryl Morey just got a new job. Ain't but so many people that could cost you $200 million, no matter what the circumstances are, no matter what it was, and then wind up getting a new job after you did something that everybody talked about and said, we're going to stay out of this one. Like,
that's
they
right.
made the call as a collective that we're going to stay out of this one. So Daryl Morey did this. He became this hero for sending a tweet that said free Hong Kong.
That's right.
Like, that's all he did. And he didn't even stand on it, right? Like, he didn't even like come back behind it. Like, I'm willing to go down behind this. He wasn't willing to go down behind this. He was searching for likes and he got the likes. And then he realized, oh, I got a little bit more than likes. And then he backed off and he decided, nah, man, I'm not going to do this anymore. But when people decide that you should stand up for something in spite of the money, it appears to be quite selective when they make the call that that's what they need to do.
Well, because once again, it's like, what are we looking for? We're looking for a reason to criticize LeBron. We're looking for a reason. Ain't nobody surviving a $200 million loss. Where's the list? How much did Colin Kaepernick cost the NFL? It went up $200 million.
I have no evidence that he cost them a dime.
Anything. He didn't cost them anything, right? I would like to compile the top five list of who cost you the most money and what happened to them. I mean, by that logic, Fredo Corleone should be alive today.
He didn't cost him any money.
He didn't cost him that much money.
He didn't cost him any money. Daryl Morey cost him $200 million. At least $200 million.
At least. And once again, the fact that everything to this has been politicized to the point where this is not even, for example, what has been the argument against signing Colin Kaepernick? He cost you money. You know, you can't have him around. He cost you money.
Yeah, that was the cop-out argument.
Right?
I didn't have a problem with what he did.
But he just cost you
money.
Daryl Morey cost you more than 20 Colin Kaepernicks could cost you, right? And not only is he getting a new job, he's not never had a job. He was employed throughout the whole, he's going seamlessly from one job to the next. He's been unemployed for what, 2 weeks?
Right. And he quit his job.
He quit his job. And he resigned. You know, just as an aside, as an unemployment goes, it always reminds me that your Atlanta Braves former outfielder, Ron Gant, once collected unemployment after being released by the Oakland A's.
Really?
it's just a factoid that always makes me laugh that a Major League Baseball player was released at, I think he's making $600,000-$700,000 a year. And then filed for unemployment.
And got it?
And got it.
Wow.
It's his money.
Wow. He walked in and was like, whatever, dog.
I'm entitled to this money.
He went and got his check.
Went and got his check.
How do you think LeBron feels about Daryl Morey turning up and getting this other job?
I would imagine that there is one person. When LeBron James writes the ultimate LeBron James memoir, who might get his own chapter, and it's him. it's Daryl Morey. And the reason is because we know that LeBron is hyper aware of all of the things, right? And we also know that in the age of Obama, one of the things that has been completely laughable is the "had that been me" question, right? If I had done that, imagine if I had done that, right? I can't think of an equivalent where an athlete had been so completely thrust into the deepest waters of geopolitics, the way LeBron James has been tossed into China, that he has become the singular focus of international business and international politics. And what is the reason for all of this? It's Daryl Morey. He's yep. the reason. And it's like, and I, when I think about this, I've always thought about it. At one point, I walked into my house and I said, okay, random 15 items, first 15 items, where were they made? Just go look. Okay, here's a trash can right there. There's a phone right there. There's a computer right here. Everything's made in China. Everything in his house is made in China, mm-hmm. right? If you look at the WTA, the entire women's tour post-US Open, all of the money is moved over to Asia. That's where the money is. Has anybody done any sort of massive expose about the WTA's relationship in China?
Right.
Nobody. Everything is run by China and Chinese money. And yet there's one person in American politics, even above the president and the secretary of state, who is associated with the communist country of China. It's LeBron James.
Yep.
It's a fascinating, fascinating dynamic when you think about it. And it's all attributable to one guy and one tweet, Daryl Morey.
Well, and I also think that there's something interesting to look at with LeBron. Look, LeBron cares what we think, right? He cares a lot about what we think. He is very calculating. I have not really enjoyed Bubble Bron very much. I haven't.
Hold on to that thought for a quick second. Is it me, or did you notice that in terms of the sloganeering in the back of jerseys, that the Lakers are the ones who really kind of did it the least? Bron didn't do it.
And they had the white dude didn't do it.
And Anthony Davis didn't do it. And Dwight Howard didn't do it either, I don't think.
No.
Right? And I don't think Rondo did either, did he?
No, I don't.
Right?
It feels like what LeBron said he wasn't doing.
Exactly.
It.
Everybody followed, except the white dude, Caruso, had Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, he was out there. He was out there. And I think there was room to not do that, right? I didn't think the jersey thing, that didn't go very far with me.
No, it went nowhere with me. I thought it was ridiculous.
Yeah, I thought the WNBA all having Breonna Taylor meant a lot more than some of these phrases. And by the way, those phrases were suggested by the players. My understanding is that the league did not take anything off the list. That was the list that the players presented. They put themselves in check, basically.
Andre Iguodala and Gordon Hayward will forever have my respect for group economics and education reform.
Yeah, I need somebody to explain to me what Gordon Hayward wants to change about education. Because I got news for you. It might not be in line with the theme of the program, right? I want to know what exactly it is that he wants flipped up in this.
Education reform, when do you want it? Now!
No! But the thing that gets me with Bron and where I find to be interesting about this is, for all the concern that he has with what people think and how calculating he is, right? He decided that on the Daryl Morey thing, I'll take all the blows for everybody. Mm-hmm. He took the blows for every single player. Because his point was, if we had done this,
that's
how you think this would play out.
That's right.
It got out and people came to ask LeBron all these questions and he ain't waver even really a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
He decided that was the fight that he decided to take on, which is interesting because there is a resistance level to it because it was a labor fight.
That's right.
It was a labor fight, you know? And actually, let me tell you this too. Hey, Gabe, play the elevator music for the people. So.
Thank you for your patience. A representative from the right time will be with you shortly. Your current hold time is
15 seconds.
Exactly. It's like, yo,
you can't ever repay that. I mean, that's like, I did a really bad thing, man. I mean, how do you repay 200 million? You can't do it.
You can't do it. You cannot do it. But LeBron decided, oh, no, 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 no. Because LeBron does do a lot in the I'm in it for everybody. Like where Danny Green said that if they tried to come back at Christmas, he doesn't think LeBron would show up for a month. No, LeBron would show up.
Yep.
Like LeBron's part of this deal. LeBron would show up. And then subsequently, everybody else would show up. Kawhi Leonard, maybe not. You know, he plays in a little bit of a different space. Mm-hmm. But, like, LeBron would show up. LeBron is down for the cause. And LeBron decided this time, yeah, I'm down for the cause. I mean, everybody got to be down for the cause. Why is this dude not down for the cause?
That's right.
100%. Why is he not? And now he's going to be up there in Philadelphia, and that's going to be hilarious.
And he's a hero.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. Daryl Morey, freedom fighter.
Yeah, you know what though? I think he's a hero with a very small number,
a small percentage, a certain very particular.
Well, basketball dorks.
That's right.
Like people.
Well,
people,
and also the right wingers out there who were looking for a cause to put LeBron in his place.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Those. Right. But they don't even care about Daryl Morey. Like Daryl Morey was so secondary for them on that. Like Daryl Morey is really popular with people with a very skewed ratio of basketball played to basketball watched.
That's right.
You know what I mean? People who have not played very much basketball, and I don't mean played much basketball like you were a star somewhere, or you played college ball, or even you played on your high school
team. You're talking about run.
Yeah, just run. Going out somewhere and playing 5-on-5 with some people that you have never met. Like people who like basketball as an intellectual exercise and not as an activity of entertainment. Those are the people that love Morey. The people who root for general managers over players. The people who relate to the suits more than they relate to the players because they need themselves to feel like they are the ones who make this happen. They are the ones who are important.
Isn't this the proper lead-in for you to then talk about Blake Snell?
Oh, there we do have. Yo, so the thing about Snell that I find to be interesting is what Kevin Cash did is the opposite of Grady Little.
That's right.
He looked up and was like, nah, I don't think this guy's got anything left, or we know this is when it starts to go bad, so I'm going to get him out here. Grady Little couldn't come back to town because he let his ace come back out there. By the way, maybe the greatest pitcher I've ever seen.
That's right.
Right? For taking him out, that dude got fired after the American League Championship Series. This dude, Kevin Cash, thought he was getting out ahead of it, and now everybody's mad at him.
And here's the thing, right? Kevin Cash didn't just cost you the World Series. Kevin Cash cost you a chance to win the World Series because it was an elimination game for you, but wasn't an elimination game for them. You needed this game.
Yes.
You needed this game more than they needed the game, and you took your best. The thing that hits me about this when you were talking about general managers is, once again, when I was talking to Tony Clark about this before the shutdown, there's this classic conversation that they're having in baseball with, what do you want your game to look like? And this World Series was so emblematic of that question, because here's what I watch. I realized something, and I don't think I'd ever articulated it this way, but it is true. I don't watch for wins and losses. I don't watch sports for wins and losses. I watch for competition. And what baseball has turned into right now is playing for wins, which means also playing not to lose, which means reducing the levels of competition. What is the value of a Cy Young Award if you're not going to be allowed to pitch in an elimination game?
Yeah.
Where's the value in this? How are you going to be Bob Gibson if you don't even get to be Bob Gibson? You don't get a chance to compete. It's the sixth inning.
Yeah, nobody started playing baseball because they wanted to, in effect, be an input.
That's right.
Right? Because that's what we're turning the people into.
I'm not a control.
Yeah. Like, that's the thing. They just don't... They those people have no interest in simply being treated as an input into the equation to determine victory. Right? Like, that's not what it is. Like, what we dig and what we enjoy. And it's funny, because Clayton Kershaw, all this talk about Clayton Kershaw's choker and everything else. What happened was Don Mattingly, for years, kept him out there because he had no faith in his bullpen. Because you could go look at those stats, especially in the Mattingly era. He was killing until he wasn't. Yeah. But because baseball doesn't work on a clock, right, he's giving up runs but not adding to the inning count, and so the ERA goes up, and then everybody flips out. Blake Snell, this was the opposite situation, right? But there's something more compelling. Like, there's something compelling about the 3 days rest. There's something compelling about Randy Johnson out of the bullpen after pitching 6 innings in Game 6
to come wrap it up in game seven. Like, that's those right. are the things that are interesting. And so I get it. If you're a fan, you want your team to win, right? Like, that's where people come from on these things. You want your team to win if you are a fan, but it's not really making for anything more entertaining. Like, it's not making this, the shift does not make this more fun.
That's right. And to me, like, John McEnroe said it a long time ago, right? We were talking at Wimbledon a few years ago, and he was talking about pressure. And he said, pressure is the possibility you could lose, right? That's what pressure is that this ain't going to work the way I want it to work out. And now I'm starting to feel the effects of the consequences of it not working out the way I want it to work out. Therefore, to me, having Blake Snell in the seventh inning of, you know, a base loaded one out jam, that's what we're here for. Can he get out of this? Can he not get out of this? And this is what builds your greatness. Blake Snell will never be considered a great pitcher in the same pantheon of the other great pitchers because he's never been allowed to fight out of stuff. Yeah. You know, he's not allowed to fight out of jams. And look at John Smoltz. John Smoltz went 8 innings in a game 7, right? Louis Tiant, 163 pitches in game 4 and then came back. And the old Boston heads know this from the 75 World Series. Louis Tiant gave up a bomb of a home run to Cesar Geronimo. They were down 6-3 before Bernie Carbo, and then Carlton Fisk hits the famous home run. But when he walked off the field, people didn't look at him and go, oh, man, you blew it. He gave you everything. Even if the Red Sox had lost that game, Louis Tiant was a legend because he left it there. And, you know, and the fans appreciate that. That's what we're here for. We're here to see you give us everything you've got for us, right? Doing a little Blake Snell lip reading? You got to be kidding me, right? He's watching Kevin Cash. Are you joking?
Yeah, but think about this. Like, I try to explain this to people. Like, franchises are different and standards are different and all this kind of stuff. So, for example, the Lakers are only going to retire your jersey if you make the Hall of Fame, right? And not a guarantee, because like Vlade Divac, I don't think they're going to retire his jersey, nor should they. He's a different kind of Hall of Famer, whatever it is, right? But you go look at whose jerseys are retired.
Well, there. You got to win a championship, and yeah. You got to go to the Hall of Fame.
Right. And the Celtics are interesting because they got a bit of a range. Mm-hmm. Like, why they retire your jersey ties into like a few different things. But I bet you, them folks in Memphis, they enjoyed those grit and grind teams more than Lakers fans enjoyed this LeBron team that won a championship.
100%.
Right? Like people are like, oh, man, y'all retire anybody's jersey now. No, that team is going to retire Gasol's jersey, Conley's jersey, Zebo's jersey, and Tony Allen's jersey. All for the reasons that you talk about.
It's what you gave us, right? I mean, and that's the thing. And the Red Sox had that policy for a long time. You had to make the Hall of Fame in order to get your number retired, right? They changed it for Johnny Pesky.
Oh, I thought it would have been Dewey Evans, but it makes sense that Pesky would have been the first one.
24 ain't retired. No.
Oh, and they didn't retire his?
Dewey? No.
Yeah, I thought they had gotten his.
Mm-mm. No. No. David Price had that number. David Price wore 24.
That's right.
Right? And so, you know, I get it, but I feel like you're losing something really valuable if you're not allowing me to compete. You're asking me, if you're Major League Baseball, you're asking me for my money. You're asking me to spend my money on you and not the NFL. You're asking me to spend it on you and not the NBA and for my season tickets. Or you're asking me, you know, not to take my girl to the movies and instead take her to a baseball game, right? This is what you're asking. But the product you're offering isn't competition.
Right.
Like John Smoltz said during the broadcast that the end of the game is going to be whether or not, you know, your front office plan beats my plan. And I'm like, that's the game?
Because these dorks decided to make it about themselves.
100%.
That's what it's like. That's the thing with me with Philly and everything with Hinkie and everything else. Mm-hmm. You dorks are trying to make this about yourselves.
And people are saying, oh, man, that makes you just get off my lawn. Like our friend Jeff Passan loves to like ridicule me on this. He'll send me some text about, oh, you know, you're like clockwork this time of year. Get off my lawn. I'm like, it's not get off my lawn. I'm here for competition. That's not an old thing. That doesn't make you, a fossil. This is why I watch the sport.
Well, it's actually interesting you mentioned that because I texted him about the dude trying to steal home. which was like, oh my God, really? Because right? One thing baseball did to decrease the entertainment factor is
less athletic.
Base running is not what it was. Like, the most entertaining baseball teams of my life, the 1980s St. Louis Cardinals.
The Cardinals, they ran.
Like I think there's no way around that. Mm-hmm. Slap it on that turf and just a bunch of dudes running around this cavernous stadium, mm-hmm. right? Loved it. There's nothing more fun to me than watching that. Ricky Henderson, right? Mm-hmm. Like, just the idea of Ricky Henderson is just so amazing, okay? And Mike Trout is kind of sort of that because he's the evolutionary. He has greater power, therefore he leans in a different direction. But what makes Mike Trout interesting is the fact that he's athletic and that he runs around and all of these things, right? Like, that is what the best part of baseball is. So I'm like, somebody tried to steal home? Wow, that was stupid. But wow, that was so much fun. And Pass, it actually hit me with, well, there is an argument for why it was a good idea. I don't want to hear the argument for why this was a good idea.
I want to see it.
I just love the idea that he tried.
That's right. Absolutely. And he took a shot. Now, was it a smart move at that time in that moment? No, because I thought Kershaw was on the ropes. But I love the play.
Yeah.
I love the play. He tried to run himself around the bases, which is what they used to do, right?
Yes. Yes. Like, this stuff is not supposed to be optimized for victory in that way. Like, I think part of what happened when all this money came in, like, we used to, these sports teams weren't expected to be profit centers before also. You know, like, these were supposed to be just kind of vanity things that you owned and had
people.
A little fun with.
It was a toy for rich people. It was like, for example, I don't know who the CEO of Ralston Purina is, but I know who George Steinbrenner was.
Yes.
Right? It was the vanity thing for the rich people.
Yep.
And now, and it is, it's a different, I remember a baseball executive told me that the entire industry of the game is changing because it's being run by Wall Street for Wall Street by the way Wall Street measures success. And the way Wall Street measures victory. And the way they measure victory is by mitigating risk. I'm like, that sounds like hell mm-hmm. when you apply it to sports. Because what it says is that Kevin Cash isn't trying to win. He's trying not to lose. They're trying to find as many different ways not to lose a game. That is not entertaining for me. That may keep you employed if you're Kevin Cash, but I don't find that particularly entertaining. I don't find it compelling. I mean, seriously, if we're thinking about, like, what are the things that we do in sports, right? We talk about, because it's not important. It's just a game, right? I mean, so we're talking about narratives and we're talking about art and we're talking about poetry. And I know this sounds really strange, but this is the reason why we watch. What stays in your memory? What stays in your memory is Isaiah Thomas playing with a busted ankle, you know, in a finals game. What stays in your memory is Michael Jordan with the flu, balling out, you know? These are the things that you remember about why we're watching this. I don't even remember the final score of that game. I just remember what we saw.
Right.
Right?
Pistons didn't even win that game.
And the Pistons didn't even win that game, right? And this is the drama of the sport. And my whole point is, I'm not, you know, and people like to take this and go, oh, well, what you're really saying is, you know, you're not going to listen to the data. I'm not saying I'm not going to listen to the data. I'm saying I'm bored.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Well, the other thing about the data is, and you and I have talked about this a lot, like I was saying, basketball, just because it works over an 82-game season don't mean it's going to work through a 7.
And that was the Blake Snell point. I got no-hit stuff tonight. Get your ass back in the dugout and let me go to work.
Right. I've thrown 73 pitches.
Exactly.
That was the thing for me. He's thrown 73 pitches. I was stunned by the idea we take a picture out after 7.
I've got the lead. This ain't the National League. Like, oh, man, well, the pitcher's coming up in the next inning, so we got to make a move here for some offense because we're trailing. You had a lead in a DH game. There's no explanation for this other than the fact that you got in the way, that the Rays, you know, in Boston, they call it Smart's disease. He got too smart for himself. You're out there thinking you're a genius. You're not a genius. You're just a manager. Right. I mean, and so absolutely offended my sensibilities because I'm like, I thought about it economically. I didn't think about it like, you know, Revenge of the Nerds. I'm thinking is that you're asking me to watch this. You're asking me to pay for this. And then I started thinking about it from a Blake Snell standpoint when I'm thinking, here's a guy with a Cy Young Award who's clearly one of the top 4 or 5 pitchers in the game, if not one of the top 2 or 3 pitchers in the game. Right. You figure you got Blake Snell, you got DeGrom, there aren't that many guys out there that you look at and go, okay, he's the real deal, right? You had that real deal on the mound in a playoff game. Where is your poetry? You know, if your manager is taking you out of the game in the sixth inning.
Yep.
You're never going to be treated as a great player.
Yep. But you know where I don't knock Kevin Cash? He clearly was just doing what he was told.
I was just like, following orders.
Yeah, you ain't gonna convince me that nobody's actually done any baseball playing, actually thinks that's a good idea. Like, they've taken the role of the manager completely away to just be like, hey, we got these numbers and you just do what the numbers say.
Well, I will tell you a story about this, where this all started. You know, people give Billy Beane the credit for it. It's not Billy Beane. You know, Billy Beane is the son of the father, right? It's Sandy Alderson.
I was about to say a La Russa
situation. It's Sandy Alderson. And Sandy, when the Oakland A's were going to hire Art Howe in 1995, when Tony went to St. Louis, right, they bring in Art, and Art was talking about all the stuff that he was going to do, and here's what I'm going to do as a manager. And Sandy stopped him in his tracks. And Sandy told him, we're not hiring you for your philosophy. We're hiring you to see if you fit ours. It's been shifting for the last 25 years. And Sandy told me when I was working on my second book, Juice in the Game, Sandy told me point blank, the biggest thing I've hated most about being in baseball, the thing that was the most confounding to me, was why for 150 years, when an organization changed a mid-level manager position, that the entire organization had to change its philosophy. The manager has too much power. He's like, why, if you're the St. Louis Cardinals team and you've got Whitey Herzog, and suddenly you get rid of him and you bring in Earl Weaver, now all of a sudden you got to get rid of Willie McGee and Ozzie Smith and Lonnie Smith and everybody? He says, managing is a mid-level position. And when you think about it, that is the demarcating line between yesterday's baseball and today's baseball. The organization decides exactly what the tenor, the personality, the talent of the roster is going to be. And in some levels, you can't argue that. It actually makes a lot of sense. But in the other, I still kind of like the fact that the manager, you know, that the manager's personality came out on the field.
If you're going to make that dude wear a uniform, let him do the job.
That's true.
That's all I'm saying. If you're going to make him wear them polyester pants, let the man do the job.
Ask me for my money. You better give me something to watch. And you had something right there. You had Blake Snell. You had it all set up for what competition is supposed to be. Blake Snell, your best pitcher, trying to keep your season alive. That's it.
Yep. And here we are. But that is Howard Bryant. Check him out all over ESPN. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. Gabe Bassain and company handle everything behind the scenes. Thank you, guys. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.